Does that ever benefit the audience?
No.
So I think it's a little more nuanced than straight no. I think the one thing...
It's no!
People of the internet, welcome to Bad Voltage Season 3, Episode 6. Can you believe that we're already at Season 3, Episode 6? This has been happening, frankly, for too long. Great to be here with my... We should have probably wrapped this up a while back. Great to be here.
Is this your resignation letter?
Yeah, there's something I've been meaning to tell you guys, that I'm moving on to bigger and better things, and that is not doing Bad Voltage. So I'm here with my cohorts, Stuart, Ian Langridge, and Jeremy Giselle Garcia. Hope you're all doing well. We still don't know Jeremy's middle name. Go and let us know in Slack what you think it is, because I have no idea. So how are you guys doing? What's going on? What's new?
Everything that's new is terrible. Right, let's not talk about the news.
It's not an incorrect point.
No.
Yeah, it's some crazy shit going on in the world right now, and I hope all of you are staying safe.
Yes.
While all this stuff is going on, because yeah. Anyway, let's not talk about what's going on there. Let's get into some funny stuff. Now, we've got a couple of interesting ones here. Did you see this thing about the about PG tips in Yorkshire tea?
I did in fact see this.
Now, you are our resident Englishman, Ak. I'm basically a traitor. So why don't you tell us exactly what went on?
Well, you see, this has been a week for tea things. But before I start, did you see the TikTok video of an American woman making tea?
No.
So she gets a cup of water and then heats it up in the microwave and then pours milk into it and then puts a tea bag in. This thing's a war crime, right? It's the
this
worst.
Is but thoroughly so, unacceptable.
So a tea week. So someone tweeted about how at least I drink Yorkshire tea and they haven't come out in favour of this stupid Black Lives Matter thing. And Yorkshire Tea absolutely correctly went, yeah, no, we totally support Black Lives Matter. We're just not jumping on the bandwagon of tweeting something meaningless in order to push our brand.
Right.
But we totally support it. Someone else then followed it up saying, hey, at least PG Tips aren't doing it. And PG Tips went, no, we totally do support it as well. Stop buying our tea. But the thing which amused me about this is the BBC obviously decided to report on it. And you can see them thinking, okay, well, so PG Tips and Yorkshire Tea have come out against people who are anti-racism. What could we call such people? It is a mystery. So
we have a word for this. It's called a racist.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you thought this was fairly well understood. Are the BBC not allowed to call people racist? Is that how this works?
I mean, I do not know exactly what happened in the editorial meeting when they came up with the headline, but they end up with PG and Yorkshire Tea tell anti-racism critics, don't buy our tea. To which, obviously, the Twitter sphere went, lol.
Anti-racism critics.
So it's now been changed to Black Lives Matter critics, as though that makes it better. I think that might actually be worse. It's...
I'm guessing that, I mean, England has pretty significant libel and slander laws, and that's probably why they had to describe it that way.
Oh, did the whole state
probably
balance thing. But yeah, I just...
Whereby here you can basically make up whatever you want, make it a headline, and sold.
Yeah.
The whole tap dancing nature of it amused me a bit.
So the other thing that I saw, which I thought was kind of interesting, is that Burger King are selling something called the Social Distancing Whopper in Italy.
What?
Which is basically a regular Whopper, but it's got like three times the onions on it.
An article you would think would be on The Onion, in fact, but no, actual news.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Now, First of all, I mean, obviously this is some ridiculous coffee marketing ploy. But Burger King have actually done kind of a few of these things in recent times. Like, I remember some journalist emailed me to ask about Burger King and branding, and I don't really know a huge amount about this, but I did some digging into this, and one of the things that I found was that Burger King ran a mobile campaign where people in Brazil could virtually set fire to the ads of its fast food rivals, and they had like a augmented reality app, and when you set fire to it, it would have like a coupon code behind it, stuff like that.
Why you can't do that?
They did some pretty crazy stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I just think Burger King doing some kind of interesting things, you know, like they're actually apparently quite well known in like the mobile marketing world, but I love the social distancing Whopper. Finally, let's talk about the hidden treasure chest. Did you see this? That apparently some treasure chest that's been out there for a while, that's packed with like gold nuggets and precious gems, was found in the Rocky Mountains.
This guy hid it out there, a rich art collector guy, hid it out there years and years ago, and then literally did a whole like a clue in a poem and everything, and he said that if no one found it before he died, he was taking the secret to the grave with him and everything, and it's been found. But apparently hundreds of thousands of people have gone looking for the secret, and it's completely legit. It's not full of like chocolate money or something. It's got real gold and stuff.
So this
in
seems
it.
Like something Cards Against Humanity would do, and then you would break open the safe and it'd be nothing but sloths. But not only was this real, I hadn't heard about it. Four people died looking for it.
I know,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like Canadian Club back in the 70s and 80s did a thing where they hid cases of Canadian Club whiskey around the world. They did 100 or so of them, I think, and only about 30 or 40 of them have been found. And every now and again, every few years, someone finds this random case of Canadian Club whiskey halfway up a mountain or something, and the Canadian Club people don't know where they all are now, so they're just out there somewhere to be found.
I think we might need to do a Bad Voltage scavenger hunt. Maybe we can get our community to all like hide things. I think that'd be kind of fun. Who knows? Anyway, let's get on to some more serious stuff. What have we got? What's first?
Well, did you see about IBM have officially declared that they're not going to do facial recognition technology anymore?
Yeah, it's a big deal because they were investing a lot of money in that, from what I could tell. So
they were, and they seem to be, well, at least from my perspective, doing so for the right reasons. They're explicitly recognizing that the facial recognition stuff tends to be used to oppress people for mass surveillance, for racial profiling, violation of rights, and they've explicitly come out and said that's why we're not doing this
to Congress.
Yeah, wrote a letter to senators and the works. I mean, Privacy International have said that's a pretty cynical choice from some people who built most of this stuff in the first place. And so time will tell whether they did it because they thought they weren't capturing the lead in the market they wanted to. And so this is a kind of, now that you were never my friend anyway kind of thing from middle school.
It's interesting that they came out too and they didn't say we're not offering it for these use cases. They specifically said IBM no longer offers general purpose IBM facial recognition or analysis software, full stop.
Yeah. They've just got out of the whole game. I mean, and this is something we've talked about quite a lot on the show, that as much as you go, oh, it's just for general purpose recognition, it gets used for stuff like this. So,
well, and the thing is, without wishing to continue the cynical theme too much, you know, I do think that less to do with what's going on with Black Lives Matter, but more to do with coronavirus, there are almost certainly a lot of companies who are using this as a out. Like, I bet there's companies who are, for example, letting go of some staff who are a bit of dead wood because the reason for that is because they need to downsize due to coronavirus. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if there are companies who are getting out of certain markets and they're saying it's because of a recent news story, whereas it's actually just not working for them. I'm not saying that's the case with IBM. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me.
They specifically mentioned George Floyd and Breonna Taylor to Congress in the release, so it seems like not.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, who knows?
And to be honest with you, if one of the bigger players in the field is getting out of it and stating that that's their reason, even if it isn't, it sends at least a something of a signal to other players that it helps to move the needle, move the Overton window towards maybe we shouldn't be doing this kind of thing.
Well, and the big question, of course, always is, right? And we've talked about this a whole bunch in the show. You know, is a technology a good thing if it can be protected and used in a good way? Like, I do think that there are useful applications of facial recognition beyond mass surveillance, racial profiling, violating basic human rights, and making people have dog ears on Snapchat.
Right. You know? We talked about it in the context of contact tracing for COVID.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't stop these technologies, but like, they've got to be used responsibly.
That's another perfect example. Did you see that? I forget where it was, somewhere in the States, the police force were using the COVID contact tracing stuff to track people who were protesting.
No, I didn't see that.
Really? Yeah. I did not see that.
Oh, no, I wish I'd put it in the news now.
Slacker.
Well, I mean, this thing just sort of scrolled past, and I went, have you heard the word doom scrolling, by the way?
No, what's that?
No.
Getting up and going through the news and making yourself sad all the time and being unable to tear yourself away from the latest terrible thing that's happened. And
oh, I thought that was called Twitter.
Well, Twitter is basically the live agent for doom scrolling, and it's quite an evocative name, I think.
The scroll of doom.
There's all of these, like, it's interesting. Yeah, there's all of these like cultural terms like vague booking, doom scrolling, humble bragging. Like, you know,
do I want to know what vague booking is?
That vague booking is when somebody posts something incredibly vague on Facebook as a means to solicit sympathy or a reaction. Like, for example, having a tough day, send cat pictures would be vague booking. That's okay. What it is. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but there's all of these interesting cultural terms that our society needs to know about now. Anyway, go back to your point.
Yeah, no, but I think that was the, that's the key thing. I mean, another example of a sort of related piece of news. Did you see about Alexis Ohanian from Reddit?
Yep.
Yeah, this is quite cool.
He resigned from his position on the board of directors. He said he should be replaced with a black candidate, and he's donated $1 million to Colin Kaepernick's campaign to Know Your Rights, which...
And Reddit's already responded saying that they're going to follow through.
You know what I think is cool about this is that, look, with what's going on with the, you know, obviously with all of this, this discussion around Black Lives Matter and police brutality and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of companies who are putting out these messages, and you touched on it earlier, Ak, about them. Some of them are a bit vapid in nature. But what I like about this is that this is like not just a statement, but this is happening at a governance level. That's what a board is, right? And this is not just, hey, I support the Black Lives Matter movement. This is a practical thing that is happening to make a statement that a more inclusive environment at a board level is important.
Yeah.
It's actionable change.
Yeah, and I love that. That's exactly what we want to be saying.
It is good.
So.
I mean, it's easy to be cynical about it and say, well, he can afford to retire because he's independently wealthy now. But at least...
Sure.
You know,
but a lot of people can afford to do a lot of things. He actually did a thing.
Yeah, he didn't have to do this, and an awful lot of other companies were like, "Oh, well, yeah, why is he doing that?" You know, none of your board are doing it. So,
I think
this is a good demonstrative move on his part that this kind of thing is possible. Yes. Like, again, it's moving the Overton window.
Yes, yep, and we like saying that. And then Apple going ARM in laptops, right? So when was the shift from Power to Intel? Was that 2005, something like that?
There or thereabouts. I'd have to actually check when it was, but...
I think it was about then.
2005.
That was a lucky guess.
June 6th of 2005, actually, was when it was announced.
Yeah, I mean, they are...
Thank you, data.
Very good. They have... I don't think it's actually been officially announced yet. I think it's been leaked.
It has.
But
correct.
But equally, Apple maintain absurdly tight control over the story. So you've got to think that maybe this is a soften up the ground thing, at least a little bit. But yeah, they've declared they're going with their own chips. Now, this has been rumored for ages. I remember, well, the last time this conversation came up about how Apple were thinking going ARM on their laptops, I got really angry about it on Google Plus, which shows you how long ago it was.
Why were you angry?
What I was going to say, why did you? You're just going to end the sentence there, it looked like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because...
That's what he's doing, is vague podcasting.
I'm vague podcasting. I'm sorry. I didn't know I was doing that. No, the reason it makes me annoyed is that I think ARM laptops are a great idea, and I'd love to see more of them. And you cannot get companies to make them for love nor money. Right. And they have a bunch of reasons why, oh, we don't think it's going to work, or the software isn't compatible, or, we can't get the tool chain up and running, blah, blah, blah. And all those things are exactly as true the day after Apple start doing it. But you watch, every other laptop manufacturer is going to have an ARM laptop on the market now. Suddenly it becomes viable just because Apple are doing it. I bet you.
So, I mean, a couple already do. Lenovo has a couple, I believe, right?
But they're only noddy ones. You can't go, I'd like to go and buy a laptop that's like your good laptops, but I want an ARM chip in it, please.
I'm curious how this will impact Mac's books, at least long term. It seems like desktops and laptops are a decreasing percentage of Apple's revenue. And this is a pretty major shift. The PowerPC to Intel one took a while. There was a lot of tooling and stuff involved. And I think a lot of what MacBooks, at least my perception of what MacBooks are used for, are virtualization for Linux and Windows a lot of the time, right? You're either running Docker because you're in a Kubernetes environment and you're doing development there, or you're in a web environment, so you're doing virtualization. So now you're going to be virtualizing x86 on ARM. Are they going to put enough work in for something that represents, last time I looked, like 9% of their revenue?
First of all, I might be in a bubble, but I think you're in a bubble and we're in different bubbles at the very minimum. I do not believe most people with Macs are doing so they can run Kubernetes inside Docker.
No. Other way around. They're running Docker because they're either in an orchestrated environment, or they're doing web development and they need to test in something, or they're running virtualized Windows because they need to test Edge specifically.
Secondly, if you're virtualizing server stuff, why would you virtualize x86? Right, if you're deploying to a Linux box, why would you not just install the ARM version?
Because a ton of things don't run on ARM, or they run on ARM super dodgy.
But that ought to get fixed relatively quickly. All the stuff that people have said, oh, we can't move to ARM because this thing doesn't work, is proprietary stuff and desktop stuff. Right, server stuff ought to work. There's a Debian ARM build and Ubuntu ARM build, right?
I'm curious if they'll put in the amount of work it will take to make this happen. Well,
the other question is, I wonder how long they've been doing it. The rumor always was that they had Intel builds of Mac OS X right from the beginning. You know, they didn't announce it until they thought it was ready, until they thought they were ready. But the very first builds of Mac OS X, they did Intel builds and PowerPC builds. And then just move to Intel when they thought the time was right. So I wonder how long they've had it running on ARM.
Yeah, and they obviously have a ton of ARM expertise given the iPad and everything else.
Yeah, given iOS and so on and so forth. And they can do the fat binaries thing and everything. Yeah, so yeah, I think this would be interesting. There's an interesting prediction then, because you don't think that other laptop manufacturers are going to jump on this, and I think they are. So this is a testable prediction.
The power gains are just too great for something like laptops to not.
That's the big question I've got, is what's the benefit from the consumer? And I'm assuming it's primarily going to be battery life.
But that benefit applies today, and none of them have done it. And that will apply 5 minutes after Apple start doing it. And I bet you that's why I was angry. That's why I was angry in 2014 when this came up.
But do you know the reason why I think Apple have not historically gone to this? It's because battery life on Macs is great. And battery life on Windows is considerably worse. Right. So you can use a MacBook Pro for a long time without plugging it in. I don't think it's enough of an issue for consumers. That's why I'm curious to see why they're moving over to it. Because I'm guessing the ARM chips are a lot more expensive than Intel chips.
No.
They've got all this engineering work. What?
No.
You're having a laugh. Arm chips cost about as much as sand. You know, if you buy a proper...
I thought they were a lot more expensive.
If you buy a proper lightning cable from Apple, as I understand it, in the end of the cable is an arm chip. So it can do the magic HDCP stuff or whatever.
Huh.
Arm chips cost nothing. Well, they're way cheaper than an Intel chip because they make tiny ones.
Didn't know that. I always assumed that they were a lot more expensive. Huh. Well, I was wrong.
No.
Well, interesting. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, God, this is a big deal for Arm, isn't it? Jeez. Getting Apple to move.
Well, not really. The big deal for Arm was making every mobile phone on the planet have an Arm chip in, and they've already managed that. There aren't that many MacBooks.
Yeah.
Hang on, I guess. I don't know enough about this. And no, I'm not talking about the MacBooks thing. I'm talking about the mobile thing. Aren't most...
Who's really going to win if everyone switches to ARM is companies like TSMC.
Who are TSMC?
I have no idea who that is.
They do ARM. So ARMs are different in that, like, if you buy an Intel chip, you buy it from Intel. ARM is just a specification. You can get it manufactured anywhere.
The largest independent
manufacturer is Taiwan Semiconductor.
I didn't know the name. As I understand it, Apple are... making their own chips, but I don't know whether that means they just talk to one of the ODMs or whether they're actually going to spin up a fab.
I would imagine they're not going to build a foundry. They'll go to someone like TSMC and have it built by spec.
I'm going to stop both of you there because it sounds like Jeremy's 286 is firing up again.
As soon as we talk about something technical, Bacon's like, nope, had enough. Let's move on.
No, I'm worried that your computer's going to explode and your math coprocessor is going to be melted.
It very well may melt. I'm going to leave that on.
Jeremy, could you please just depress the turbo button, please, before you go to the next segment?
In a previous show, we almost got sidetracked into a discussion of exclusivity, of certain games being exclusive to particular consoles or TV programs being exclusive to particular channels or streaming services. The thing which tipped us off was Joe Rogan's podcast going exclusively to Spotify in exchange for $100 million. And we said we wanted to push this off to something, to a longer segment, because there's a lot to unpack there. And this is that longer discussion. So I wanted to dig a bit deeper into what we think about it, because I think there's simultaneously a knee-jerk reaction against the idea of exclusivity. It feels somehow unfair, even if you're not affected by it. But also, there's something of a sense of pride, I think, when the exclusive thing is a thing that you're already getting, or that you're prepared to go somewhere to get. So no one seems, you know, I'm not particularly bothered when the BBC come up with a really good program and you people can't watch it, because I get to watch it, check it out. I'm like, and if you said, but that's exclusivity, that's not fair, I'd say, well, sucks to be you. You're not paying the TV license. You don't live here. Get stuffed. Equally, it really annoys me that the Last Week Tonight people put their stuff on YouTube and then I can't watch it. And that's not exclusive.
Why can't you watch it?
Because it's geo-blocked.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, so this is not...
He specifically makes jokes about when he jokes about Parliament. They can't show it in the UK because you're not allowed to joke about Parliament. So I assumed you could watch the rest of it.
You can watch... older episodes on YouTube seem to not be geo-blocked. And there's nothing stopping you subscribing to a service and watching. You can subscribe to HBO. But the point is, they put it on YouTube for free, but I can't watch it. And I have no idea why, whether that's licensing or just to irritate me or whatever. But that's not exclusivity to HBO. That's exclusivity to the United States of America, which annoys me, and so on. So,
This is what VPNs are for.
I wanted to dig in a little bit to what we think of it, why we like it or why we don't, and why people would do this, why people would choose to go exclusive to a particular platform or a particular way of distributing things.
So I do think we need to be specific in what we define as exclusivity, because this is, as you said, there's many layers to this.
Yes.
And I think when we were planning this show, we were trying to define what are we defining as exclusivity? And we came up with narrowing your content available to a specific platform away from other profitable markets and platforms. So to use Joe Rogan as an example, there's no doubt, we don't know his business, but there's no doubt his show is profitable on YouTube, right?
Yes.
He charges advertising, he enables monetization, he gets money, and he's deliberately choosing to take it away from YouTube. It will be unavailable after September, and bring it to Spotify. So he's locking off a profitable market. And that's what we mean by exclusivity.
Yeah. Right? And there's a couple, just to limit the discussion a little bit, otherwise we'll be here for 1,000 years. There's a couple of things we've explicitly excluded from this discussion, even though they probably count as exclusivity. The first one is first party versus third party stuff. We're basically talking about third party things here. So people who make a platform and then only make their stuff available on that platform, not part of this discussion. Yep. So the fact that you can't get Nintendo stuff on a PlayStation, yeah, technically that counts as exclusivity, but not part of the discussion.
It doesn't count, yeah.
Similarly, we're not really talking about PC software. We might talk about games here, but we're not talking about software generally. So we're not covering the fact that Photoshop's not available on Ubuntu.
Yeah.
For example, I mean, technically that's exclusivity, but that feels to us...
Well, it's not really exclusivity in that case. It's available for Mac and Windows.
Yeah, that feels less like we've exclusively chosen these platforms and more like we've decided to exclude this one platform.
Yes.
You know,
well, the thing is it kind of goes back to our definition of narrowing your content to specific platforms away from other profitable markets. Arguably, Adobe have chosen to do that because Linux is probably not profitable enough for them, right?
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
So, yeah, but that's separate.
So, I think there's a few different. What we were trying to get a handle on is people's motives for doing this. Why would you choose an exclusive deal with one particular platform or distribution method or whatever? And you can look at that from the point of view of the publisher, you can look at it from the point of view of the creator and the point of view of the audience. So let's talk about the publisher first. So take Joe Rogan as an example, right? Why do Spotify want Joe Rogan to come to their platform particularly?
I mean, I was going to say it's got to be for eyeballs or earballs.
Earballs.
It's the reason why. Earballs. That might be the name of the show.
I'm calling the show Earballs. I'm writing it in the thing now. Right, carry on.
I'm sorry. It's been a long week and it's Tuesday. Anyway, I feel quite a significant amount of shame for that. It's got to be because, I mean, he's got an audience, right? I mean, content creators, by definition, what's powerful for them, about them, is they've got an audience of people who will follow him around. Like, I don't think people watch Joe Rogan on YouTube because it's on YouTube. They will go to wherever they can go to. Now, the question is, will they be willing to pay for it if they need to? That's a whole separate thing.
They don't have to pay for it. It's on Spotify for free. From Spotify's perspective, at least how I'm interpreting some of the moves they've made recently with other acquisitions that they've made, like Gimlet is an example, The Ringer is an example, is I think they're going all in on becoming the advertising network for podcasts. They're not really podcasts, so I hesitate to call them podcasts. You can't download them. I am curious if they'll keep an open ecosystem or not where you can listen to them elsewhere. But the thing about Spotify is they only stream things. You can't download it. And because of that, they can interject ads wherever they would like, and they can do so in a way that geo-targets them and targets you specifically. And because of that, they'll be able to charge substantially more. So I think what they're doing is building out a library of content that they think is compelling so that they can get other podcasts on their platform so that they can become the de facto, you know, where AdSense did it and Facebook's doing it with advertising. They want to be the largest podcasting network for lack of a better.
They want to be to podcasts what YouTube was to video.
Yeah. So I should preface this by saying I do not listen to Joe Rogan. I've never listened to a show, so I'm not sure. And doing a little bit of research for this show, however, it seems like a substantial amount of his listeners actually do come from YouTube and do come from the algorithm where they are researching a topic and they are led to a snippet from his show and then watch the show. So I think this will actually have a pretty big impact on his listenership from what I'm seeing. The other thing I think is interesting is he seems to really focus on video. And Spotify kind of has video, but you really got to look for it. And it's not, let's go with not their strong suit. So
it's not a core part of their offering.
It's not. So I'm curious how the transition to audio only will impact this show as well.
Maybe the Joe Rogan thing is one part of kind of delivering a better video experience. What I didn't know that you just said, Jeremy, is that Spotify don't allow downloads for podcasts, because you can download music, but you can't download podcasts, which I think is interesting.
I don't think so. So I should note here that I tried to add Bad Voltage to Spotify. It requires a working email address, which I apologize to the listeners. We do not have as of today, but we will have in the near future. When that happens, we will also add this to Spotify just to continue the research.
Yeah. Yeah. The point about YouTube, I think, is interesting as well, because I was actually chatting to this guy last week who is like a fairly prolific YouTuber. He gave like a session. A bunch of people were in there, and I chatted to him a little bit afterwards. And he said that the vast majority of YouTube traffic comes from suggested videos. It's not from search. Like, YouTube is what, the second biggest search engine in the world, I think I read. But it's nothing. It's a fraction of the traffic is from people typing stuff into YouTube. People pick up one video
and then
they go down the rabbit hole. So I wonder how much Joe Rogan's considered that, because I don't think you get that as much, anywhere near as much with Spotify. So,
well, there's an interesting question. I mean, the thing which shocked me about this is not that Spotify wanted to attract a big name, because either they've essentially, they're trying to create they call it podcasting platform from scratch. Brief interjection here. If you take it away so I can't get it and listen to it in a client of my choice and there's no RSS feed, it's not a freaking podcast.
It's not, right? Absolutely.
So shut up, Spotify. But you're a radio station where I can choose which show I listen to. Anyway, leaving all that to one side for the moment, because it's far gone from the point we're trying to make. I get why Spotify would want someone to come to their thing. And if you say, okay, we want our new podcasting thing to have a bunch of big names in it, and you put together a list of big names who could be in it, Joe Rogan's going to show up in that list.
So they said he was he wasn't previously on Spotify at all. He was the most searched podcast name on the platform.
Yeah.
They've made that very clear.
So they're trying to pull people in, and the best way to launch a new platform and get people to give a damn about your new platform is to have something that everyone wants exclusively on your new platform, so they have to come to you to get it. So enlarging slightly, if you look at the Epic Store, right? They decided to build a rival to Steam. And why would anyone care? And the answer is because you could get Fortnite there. So everyone went. And it worked. Right. and this is a similar kind of vibe. So, what I don't know, but the thing which blew me away is that they're prepared to spend that much money on it, because even if they manage to,
he's worth it.
It just isn't. How much
are you kidding me?
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Much money are they going to get? If they manage to lock down the whole podcasting market, so they control all advertising in all podcasts, then yeah, they'll have a bunch of money, and therefore it's worth spending that on Joe Rogan. But the incremental cost over people who weren't on Spotify before and have come to Spotify largely to get Joe Rogan stuff, are there 100 million of these people? That seems like a lot of people to me.
That's not how the maths works. This is not how businesses do business. The reason why it's worth $100 million is, first of all, he's a giant brand. He's going to drive a huge amount of traffic to Spotify that are going to ultimately convert into subscriptions, right? And at the end of the day, this is also going to send an extremely strong message to other podcasters that they need to get into the platform, which is going to bring even more people to it. They're not going to look at it from we need to recoup our $100 million back in a certain period of time. It is... you know, they're frankly, it's marketing budget. That's what they're spending their $100 million on.
So it's definitely advertising budget. I don't think this is about adding subscribers at all, because none of their podcasts, to my knowledge, are subscription required. So all the Ringer stuff, all the Gimlet stuff is on the free version of Spotify. I think they are specifically looking to build out. If you look at what now is being advertised on podcast, it's things with super high lifetime value, like Squarespace, Casper, things that you purchase rarely but are a high volume of lifetime dollars. And that is precisely because it isn't trackable. It's the early days of internet advertising where it was not trackable at all, and ads were reflective of that, where I think as the market matures and it is more trackable and the demographics are there, you'll be able to charge more. So they're not looking to get a larger piece of the current pie. They're looking to make a new pie. And I don't think it's about subscribers at all, which is why they reclassified, I believe, their Gimlet acquisition under advertising.
I disagree with you. I don't agree with you. I think that one part...
I don't think it's about subs at all.
I absolutely believe that they want to build out an advertising platform. And at the end of the day, what they can do with their platform that is not the same as Facebook, where Facebook are by far the most popular advertising platform in the world, you can get a reasonable sense of someone's content interests in Spotify. And you'll be able to advertise certain things towards them. Absolutely. Not deny that for a second. But I don't believe you can run a company like Spotify and not want to be the dominant content platform. Just look at what Netflix did, right? Netflix were not just about building a great business and having some interesting content there. They're all about domination. I don't believe for a moment that they don't want. This isn't a key part of getting a ton of people onto Spotify and paying for Spotify as well.
Well, what's interesting, Jeremy, you mentioned that it's all available to free users, which it is. But because you can't be a free user on your phone, Spotify's free versus paid usage is way different to everybody else. Like, I couldn't get any more recent figures than sort of mid last year, they had 217 million monthly users of the platform and 100 million monthly subscribers. So to a first approximation, a really high percentage of people who are using Spotify at all are paying for it. I mean, my daughter pays for it. She's got no money, but she pays for Spotify because she really wants it.
It's one of the best deals out there.
Right.
If you think about it, if you're a music fan, compared to buying albums, it's incredible value. And I think people can justify that. If it completely fucks the artists, by the way, but it's incredible value for the consumer.
And this is the point. One of the interesting questions that probably ought to come up here, looking at Spotify specifically, is how many people are sitting there having released an album and getting 0.00003 cents every time someone plays it, saying, where's my 100 million bucks?
Well, they're not Joe Rogan.
Taylor Swift is, and she's annoyed about how much money she gets.
Yeah. Well, Taylor Swift isn't on Spotify, right? For that reason.
Because she wasn't getting paid enough money. She wasn't getting 100 million bucks, and she's a considerably bigger deal than Joe Rogan is.
Is she? I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if she is.
Yes, yeah, she
possibly.
Is.
But the point is that I think the core of your point is how much revenue is generated.
Well, hang on, because I feel like Jeremy's about to challenge my numbers, which means that I maybe...
What? No, about Taylor Swift?
No, about no Spotify idea. Subscribers. Sorry,
I thought I you didn't were... know that you couldn't play podcasts on mobile without the paid app.
Is that true? As far as I'm aware, you can't use the app on your phone at all unless you've got Spotify Premium.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think so either.
I think you can use it, but it just randomly plays songs like.
But Pandora. I think you can play podcasts.
I would be. Well, I mean, I.
I might be wrong. It's been a while since I've used the free app.
As I understand it, that the desktop app worked free. But so we need to clarify this then. So I'm interested in people's
We're also sliding off the point.
Yeah,
we are.
So to the exclusive content for podcast thing, I think Luminary is trying very hard to build a exclusive podcast-only network. It's not working out very well from a subscriber perspective. So that's why I think advertising will likely...
Never heard of them.
So they raised $130 million. All they do, their goal is to basically be Netflix for podcasts. They have a whole bunch of celebrities and journalists and TV hosts doing content that they don't do anywhere else, and they are not getting the subscriber numbers at all that they wanted. In fact, they just raised a down round, which you know how rare down rounds are these days. So I'm curious to see if a subscriber-only podcast network is possible, where I think ad-supported... While my personal preferences for ads aside, I think ads is probably the way you support these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's what is going to be, I think, interesting for this is Spotify are clearly wanting to broaden beyond just music and really dig into podcasting, and that does open up a potential avenue for them when it comes to advertising. So the question is, like, I think we would all agree that their exclusivity is clearly something that publishers want, right? You know, you create,
as far as I can tell, every single, well, certainly Silicon Valley business plan and a lot of business plans outside the valley have some sentence along the lines of, if everyone in the world used our product and every time they spent a dollar, we got 1 cent, look at how much money we'd have.
Yeah.
And that's what's behind, yes, that. So the rationale for the publisher here, we're saying, is that they get every podcast on earth.
So this seems like a good chance to segue to the rationale for the creator.
Yeah, but I don't. Just before we go on, I don't think they want every podcast on earth. I think they want the top 10 podcasts. I think they don't care about Bad Voltage. They care about Joe Rogan. So that's why Bad Voltage can't go and ask for a $100 million check.
That's interesting.
I vehemently disagree with that.
I think they want the long tail
to get people to be there because that's how advertising networks are built.
Yeah, and because if you only want those 10, then you don't need to build a podcast system. You don't need to let other people sign up, right? You just go to Joe Rogan and say, we'll give you the $100 million and we'll just release your show on here. You just stop calling it a podcast. There's no reason to go to any effort at all to attempt to build a podcasting network if all you want is the top 50 people.
Well, no, let me be clear. I'm not saying I misspoke. I'm not saying that they don't. Of course, they want everybody to have their podcast in there. What I'm saying is the way you go about doing that is you get the biggest podcast in there, and then that's going to pull other people in, right? And I think the way in which you build an advertising network is not necessarily having a long tail of podcasts. It's having a shitload of people who use your system. I'm sure that if you look at Facebook, there are huge trends in terms of what people are using Facebook for, and that's the reason why it's become a powerful platform for advertising. But one of the reasons why it's become a powerful platform is because they've divided it into groups and people can mark their interests. So Spotify, to a degree, can do that. But anyway, I think we're all on the same page.
Yeah, so the question there is basically, if you are, for example, a mattress company, do you advertise on every podcast who takes advertising, or do you spend all your advertising budget on one advert in the Super Bowl?
Right.
Yeah, okay. So
let's move on.
Let's move on to the rationale for the creator then.
Yeah, this is kind of more interesting.
Right, so leave Joe Rogan aside for one of this, because he's obviously got 100 million reasons why he did it. But why, if you were, you convinced me to do damn nearly anything for $100 million. Why, if you are offered an exclusivity deal, would you take it? And to some extent, this applies to almost everybody, right? If you're a band and a record company offers you a deal, that's an exclusivity deal, right? You can't go record with any other band. You can't do concerts when you want anymore.
So I think there's a couple, at least from my perspective here, and it depends on what we're talking about, if we're scoping it to this specific conversation about podcasts or generally speaking. But I think rationale for creators to go exclusive, sometimes they want a platform that offers a thing that no other platform offers, and the only way to get access to that platform is through some exclusive deal, for better or for worse. And if you do the math and think, I can create a lot better content on this platform, that could be a potentially enticing thing. I think another thing for 99.9% of content creators, their problem is not piracy. Their problem is obscurity, right? With the getting found is the problem. So Taylor Swift is a great example. Her problem, maybe piracy is a problem for her. It's not a problem for us or for the, like I said, the vast majority. So if you feel there's one avenue that being there, they give you an amount of discoverability that you would not get elsewhere, that could potentially be worth it. Whether it is or not is a, like Kindle's a great example. Kindle does an exclusive, if you sign your ebook to be an exclusive, they'll do a whole bunch of things that they won't do otherwise. So you'll be on Kindle Unlimited and some other very specific things. If you're a publisher, you have to decide, is being on Kindle Unlimited and the other things specific to being exclusive worth it?
Right.
Or do I want to be on every single platform imaginable, be one of a billion things on those platforms and try to market it myself? And the math is going to be different for each individual. But that's, I think the potential benefits are, what do the platforms offer you in the exclusive deal that they don't offer you otherwise?
I think your point, Jeremy, about piracy versus obscurity is kind of the crux in my mind of all of this. Because if you look at, I think, the trend that people have been having in terms of content production, let's just do something simple like social media. People don't just post their social media posts to Twitter. They cross-post them to Twitter and to Facebook and to LinkedIn and to everywhere else. They want to capture all of these different platforms. And, you know, like people now, the trend with live streaming has gone from just being on Facebook Live to using something like Restream to stream to YouTube and Twitch and Facebook Live at the same time. I think the culture of the internet today is not exclusive. But then when you become a super, super popular brand like Taylor Swift, that's when the opportunities spring up, I think. So I think we really are dealing with, like, people talk about the 1% in society. We're talking about the 1% of content creators.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it feels like the, you've heard the thing about, borrow a dollar and the bank owns you, borrow $1 million and you own the bank, right? If you, this is like, think about, chat clients, for example. If you're on a chat client that your mates aren't and you try and convince them to use your thing, everyone just gets annoyed with you. It's like, why should we have one more thing? But if you're the important one who everyone wants to talk to and you say, I don't use Facebook Messenger, I don't use WhatsApp, I use this other obscure thing, everyone will come to it just to get to talk to you. So people are prepared to put up with almost any amount of technical nonsense in order to get at things that they want. I mean, a perfect example of that is, since we're talking about piracy, just how much effort people are prepared to go through to pirate stuff.
Right.
And this kind of ties into that. One of the things I'm not sure about, though, is you've both talked about benefits that you get from being exclusive to a platform. But I can't think of any benefits like that that aren't marketing benefits. In theory, there are tech benefits to being on a particular platform. But in practice, I don't know anyone who's particularly motivated by them. No one releases their game only on Steam because you get Steam achievements.
Right.
Right? No one releases their game only on the Xbox because the Xbox provides something brilliant that the PlayStation doesn't.
Well, I think the exclusive, it might not be, I think maybe it's kind of related. I don't think it's necessarily just marketing. It can just be traffic, right? So I think one of the reasons why a lot of people, local groups, for example, are exclusively on meetup.com and they're not necessarily on Meetup and Facebook and everything else is because that's where the audience is. You know, that's where they hang out.
I'll give you that for Meetup, but that's interesting because one of the things that I thought about, and I tried to get figures for this, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know what questions to ask. So I'll be interested in people's thoughts, is there's a sort of a seesaw tip over point. At first, what you want to be in the place where everyone's looking because that's where everyone's looking. But everyone else also realizes that at the same time as you, and so they also go there, and then discoverability goes back down again. So when the iPhone first came out, everyone was looking in the iPhone app store for their games, and there weren't that many. So you put your game in there, and suddenly you got loads and loads and loads of customers. But now, being in the app store doesn't really get you much discoverability, because how do you stand out among 50 million other games? In the same way, how would being on Spotify help Bad Voltage's visibility? Answer, as far as I can tell, not at all. Even if everyone was on Spotify.
So I think the same way it impacted Joe Rogan is a bunch of people were searching for Joe Rogan specifically on that platform. He wasn't there. Did some of them then go to a general search engine and search for him? Certainly. Did all of them? Probably not. So if there's one place you go,
Well, yeah, but by definition, Spotify can't be the one place you go for podcasts, because until 5 minutes ago, they didn't do them. Where everyone went, the one place everyone went for podcasts was the Apple podcast store, which he was in. So that's what I mean. He can't have gone there for discoverability, because by definition, Spotify can't be the place everyone wants to discover podcasts, because they invented it a week ago.
You know what? I don't want to... we spent a lot of time talking about Joe Rogan, but... And I think we need to stay in the exclusivity train, but I actually think one of the main reasons why he went over there is because YouTube keeps taking down content. And Joe Rogan is hardcore libertarian, and I think he's increasingly concerned about that.
I think he will find Spotify not a good home if that's what he was optimizing for.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. And I don't know how much... Well, yeah, I think you may be right, Jeremy.
The other thing that's curious is a lot of people are going back to the Howard Stern comparison, because he went from a pretty open platform to exclusively on Sirius. And it was interesting. Yeah. He clearly made a lot of money, so probably the correct decision for him. And the fact that it worked, even though for that one you had to buy new hardware, which is obviously a much bigger ask than maybe download a new app if you already have Spotify, legitimately just do nothing. I don't think it's exactly the same, but the one thing that I wouldn't have thought about until I read about an article yesterday that kind of said, the other thing that Joe Rogan's giving up here, and you are going to give up if you're going exclusively to a more difficult to get platform, and I would put Spotify is probably not as accessible as YouTube, is Mindshare. Like, you used to hear about Howard Stern all the time. I don't hear about him. I almost forgot about Howard Stern until I was reading the article yesterday. He's still around. He's still on Sirius. He's still making a ton of money, but he just doesn't have the mind share because not as many people listen. So he's making more per listener, but he has way less listeners and therefore a little bit less mind share. So I wonder if that entered into his personal equation at all.
Well, that dovetails neatly with the third leg of this tripod, which is what's the impact on the audience of a game they want or a podcast they want to listen to or a show they want to watch going exclusive. So my basic question for you here is, if there's a thing you want to see or that an audience wants to see, does that thing being exclusive to one particular distribution venue, does that ever benefit the audience?
No.
So... I think it's a little more nuanced than straight no. I think the one thing... If you're going to be using Howard Stern and Joe Rogan specifically as examples, if you are suddenly a $100 million personality, you may have access to, at a production level, at a guest level, to some things that you might not have had access to before, and therefore your show might be a little bit better. So that would be the only thing I can think of, is you may have more tools to make a slight, like if you looked at what could John Oliver do without HBO, it certainly wouldn't be as much as he can do with HBO, and that's an exclusive deal.
Yes.
So I think it's when your budget goes from A to A times 10, you probably can do some cool stuff that you couldn't do previously. And if exclusivity is it access to 10 times the budget, that's the only thing I can think of.
I don't know, because I think that people don't watch these shows for their production values. They watch them for the content. And if you're popular...
I wildly disagree with you.
No, I firmly believe this. And I think that if you... And I'm putting aside like TV shows and movies because they're a different category. But in terms of like podcasting and those kinds of things, like people watch Joe Rogan because of the conversation between him and the other person. I think so long as they're in the same room and the audio quality is basically decent, people will watch it. I think the reason why they watch it is not the production. And that's the reason why the fact that it's been on YouTube is made it super accessible. But I think you make a good point, Jeremy, that like, look, it might open up doors and avenues that weren't available to them. You could conceivably have benefits for the audience. Like maybe you get like with Patreon, right? If you fund somebody, then you can get access to benefits and unique exclusive content and stuff like that. That could be a benefit. But I don't think any consumer typically wants options limited. And I think it massively depends on your income. I'll give you an example of this for me myself, right? Just to finish off very briefly, decided I wanted to watch all of the Seinfeld shows again. I love Seinfeld. We have Netflix and Amazon Prime. They weren't on there. I found out that they were on Hulu. And I just went and bought Hulu. Like, I just went and paid for it. Because to me, I can rationalize it. Like, I pay the $7 or whatever, and I get to watch a show that I really want to watch. And I have no issue with that. But I'm not living paycheck to paycheck. If you don't have a lot of income and money coming into your family, that's a very that's a radically different decision. So I think a big chunk of this is how much disposable income you've got as well.
Yeah, I mean, I will certainly buy that there's a relationship between going exclusive gets you more money, having more money improves your show or your thing, whatever it is you're doing. But that's not, right. But that's not specifically a benefit of going exclusive. I mean, if Joe Rogan struck oil in his back garden, his show would have also got better, right? That's just having more money allows you to do better things. Exclusivity is just a way of getting money.
Yeah.
But getting a really big important sponsor would have done the same thing for him as well. And it's not like he's short of a bob or two anyway, for goodness
sake. No, the guy's a multimillionaire, right? Like he's, he can invest. I mean, you know, but yeah.
On your point about production values, Jono, I think there's a, I don't know if you'd call it a trend, because I'm not sure if it's deliberate, but there's quite a lot of stuff that I watch or consume these days where they very much give the impression that it's just one guy or a couple of guys, and they've actually got a whole staff of people behind the scenes doing audio production and mixing and camera work, and you know, they're fully fledged TV shows. They just don't look like it. I'd be interested to know how many staff Joe Rogan has got for his stripped down, doesn't need any production values, it's just me and a table and someone else and two mics vibe. Because if he's got 10 people producing that look, I don't for a moment blame him for that. I think it's absolutely the right thing to do. But I think the point is that just because something doesn't look massively produced doesn't mean that they didn't put an awful lot of work into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the argument in favor of production values aren't the primary rationale for the audience is PewDiePie. Like PewDiePie is enormously popular and very simple production values. I'd actually say Joe Rogan is a good example of that. It's just two people sat in a studio. I actually think that, now, does that mean you need a staff and you might have writers and you need booking agents? Of course, yeah. But I think that the great value of a lot of content today is people can become enormously popular with limited production values. We've seen this with people putting together little shows on YouTube from Zoom calls, you know, but you've got to have some unique values. I don't know if that plays such a significant role, but going back to the point of like the impact on the audience, I actually think that most audience members don't like exclusivity. I think they don't want it unless they're invested in the platform. Like PlayStation fans will love PlayStation exclusive titles because they're invested in the platform.
Yeah, but it's not like they like the concept of exclusivity. They're just okay with it because as far as you're concerned, if you've already got a PlayStation and a thing you want comes to PlayStation, that's not exclusive at all because you've got it.
Yeah. it's also your team is winning at that point, right? Yeah. That's the reason why they
like it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But that to me is the thing. I think the thing you said, I'm kind of with Jono on this. Does exclusivity ever benefit the audience? No. It might avoid harming the audience, which is not the same thing as benefiting them.
Right.
But technically there are, you know, there are maybe things you can do on this platform that you couldn't do before, and that makes it possible. But to give you a stupid example, I mean, you mentioned Spotify doing geo-targeted, person-targeted ads. And if you're prepared to listen to ads in order to get Joe Rogan, and you're the sort of person who thinks, well, I'd rather have ads that are relevant to me, then you get that on there in a way that you might not do if you're just listening to an MP3 that you fetched in your podcatcher app. But I don't think anyone goes, that's the reason I listen to Joe Rogan, because I get more targeted ads.
Well, and one potential avenue where it could be, and again, I don't know if this is exclusivity, is if you have a content creator that is exclusive to a platform because there is a greater level of kind of freedom of speech type stuff. Like I can understand an audience liking that they can get content uncensored, uninfluenced, right? In the same way that, you know, people like to buy uncut movies, for example. And there's more and more kind of discussion and debate about, you know, the impact of people like YouTube on taking people's videos down and whatever else. And I don't want to get into that because that's a big topic, but you could argue that by being exclusive to a platform that they give you a greater level of breadth when it comes to, you know, the content that you can publish. Well, now, the problem with that is that you could be abused and all the rest of it, but put that to one
side. Well, that ties into the kind of final question that I've got, which is that, is this only an important thing for super popular people? I mean, if Bad Voltage ends up on Spotify, we are no... they're not going to go, well, if we went exclusively to Spotify, they wouldn't go, well, we're definitely not going to cut your podcast because we don't agree with it, because you're exclusive to our platform. So I don't know that it's necessarily the exclusivity deal that's important. It's just that you're an important person.
Yeah. I think it's way more of a deal if you're popular.
Yeah.
For sure.
Bad Voltage doesn't have any exclusivity contracts dangled in front of our faces, we can tell you people.
We do not.
If you want to, give us a call.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I am interested in hearing other people's thoughts on this. Is there anyone out there who sees a good reason for exclusivity if you're not the person getting the check or the platform trying to lock down the industry?
Yeah. Yeah, I would also love to, this is a big meaty topic, great fodder for the Bad Voltage community. Pop onto Slack and check it out. Also, just before we wrap up, we want to mention a big thank you again to Marius from NerdZoom Media for editing the show, and he's been doing a wonderful job. And Marius, being the overachiever that he is, has added chapter marks in the MP3s now as well. So
very nice.
You can skip past all the crap, or skip to a different type of crap later in the show. So, but yeah, thank you, Marius, for that.
Thank you, Marius.
Interesting topic, lots to discuss. Go get your thoughts in, and I guess we'll see you lovely people on the next one. They did some pretty crazy stuff. Yeah. They're like in the what is that noise?
I believe it's the fan on my desktop.
What?
It's quite hot.
Marius, would you please leave this in? Jeremy's 286 is just flaring out of control.
My 8088 is it's not working out very well.